I am unashamed. What about you?
The biblical times, you had many names. I think in stages of
but
your life.
But you have many names now.
I know.
They call you Slick.
Not enough. Chase. I need more names. You just
they're gonna your grandkids are gonna call you Rock. You know
what? I'm getting closer to pushing that 3.
Missy, the last time I talked to her, her will had bent. I wouldn't say it's broken, but it's bent. It's
that just shows you if you lead, if you lead, they will follow. Because I hadn't got
Chase
off of it.
Wants to be Rock.
I said, look, I don't know why you think this is so ridiculous when the savior of the world was known as the chief cornerstone. I got that from him. You got a problem with that, argue with him. You remember what he told Peter? On this rock, I'm going to build my church. Rock is the ultimate grandparent name, and now I've quit denying it. I am now pursuing it. I
want to have a bumper. Championing.
I want a bumper sticker and say, "Yeah, I'm known as Rock." We let some celebrity steal that name.
But so listen, this shows you how a woman thinks, though, Jay. So I was like, well, I kind of liked it. I mean, I laughed when he first said it because I thought he was joking, but I kind of like it too. And she said, children can't pronounce their R's until they get a certain age. so he'll be so called Rock.
That is so my wife.
And I was That's like, true. You know, I never thought of that one, Miss.
Well, wasn't there a group of people in Star Wars named Walks?
The Ewoks.
Ewoks. Yeah. They were Ewoks.
They
were the Ewoks.
They got that from they had the idea when they were cooking some rice in a wok. And they said, oh, I got it, honey. Let's name them Ewoks.
Ewoks.
They're from the country E.
Planet. Planet. They were from a planet.
They're from a different planet.
Oh, well, planet country.
Star Wars, Jay. You got to expand your universe. So we're talking about names because Dad met a guy yesterday. We were trying to remember his name. That's what started this discussion. This is how we go off the rail. You met a guy from Jerusalem. You had more than one person from Jerusalem at your churches, didn't you?
Yeah, one of them that spent time in the Middle East. Yeah, he was from France and was converted.
Well, good. And, the French need it.
And Stephen, I think so it's Cowley, I thought his last name. I'm probably butchering your last name, Stephen. But,
does he listen to the podcast?
He was born in Jerusalem and found a scrap of paper on the road one day and picked it up. And he said he read John 3:16. He speaks about 3 or 4 languages.
Wait a minute, Phil. He found a scrap of paper that had John 3:16 on it?
He said he found a scrap.
In Aramaic.
Aramaic, yeah. Yeah. And he picked it up and he said, He said, so we investigated, you know, for God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten son. Whoever believes in him won't perish, but have eternal life. He looked at that. He said, So he investigated him, and he said that's how he was converted to Jesus. Well, now
that's a story.
Now he's story. Surrounded by, a lot of hostility. You know, Jerusalem is Israel, you know, the Palestinians in Israel, these wars.
I was there, and constantly I was lowering my head, looking around.
He's been beaten severely, lost family members, lots of gunfire inside the place where they were meeting, lots of beatings. So out of that, his faith is strong, and he's trying to create a revival situation in Jerusalem. I think there was about 30,000 Christians are left there, but the mighty throngs out there, you know, you got, you know, Islam and Christianity and Judaism all in a mixture right there in close quarters. So it's a pretty daunting task, but they're trying to raise some finances to get something going over there, you know, like a beachhead of evangelism.
He's
kind of
working through the Southern Baptist, right, to do it.
I asked him when he showed up yesterday morning, I said, why don't you do the Lord's Supper for us? As a Jew, you probably appreciate
I thought that was interesting. It shows kind of the what would you call it? The spontaneity of Dad's group over there on Sunday morning because you know the sky was coming. It's like, hey, why don't you do communion today?
Well, the difference which in was really Phil and most church leaders.
Up to, and so,
was it good?
Oh, it was fantastic.
But I'm saying the difference in Phil and most leaders, if that would have started going down a wrong road, Phil would have just said, hey, all right, that's good.
he would have got the cane out, the old hook.
Well, the guy was already impressed, Dad told me, because Dad has your AR there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he sees the AR and he was like, hey, I feel like I'm back home.
Yeah.
with the old AR here next to me when I'm speaking.
We laugh about that, but to all the people who have lost their lives, either at just going to some kind of concert or just going to meet with God's people on Sunday morning, somebody bursts in, you know, kicks the door in and starts shooting.
Happens every day.
It happens a lot. So because of that, you know, so in a lot of ways, we're no different than the Israelis over there who are Christians.
Didn't you tell me that these people carry around a thing that looks like a coat hanger?
What he said.
Yeah, you said, and then he snaps it out, and then they'll just beat the fire out of you. You get the old 40-1.
He took a beating himself, and he said they just beat him. And so some of his kinfolks, but he said they just beat him down. It was horrific. But
it's hard for American Christians to kind of realize what people around the world
do. But once you go over there, severely. I mean, I saw the day we all went to the wall and the celebration on the Sabbath. You know, we went. And I mean, I saw several young lads get whacked just in normal proceedings.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, not only will they whip you, they'll do it in public. not whoop. That was just a whack.
A lot of these things going on in the book of Acts has reached all the way to us and some of our brothers. And in Jerusalem, it's a daily thing. It's a daily keep watch.
Well,
Be vigilant.
I told you the story when we went and had our worship and service in Bethlehem, and you know that building had been bombed 13 or 14 times, and it was just a whole different attitude when you're sitting there thinking at any moment this could blow up.
Yeah,
I mean,
he wrote a book, Living in Jesus, the Backyard of Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where...
Well, that's a good name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Living there and what it's like 2,000 years later. And I hadn't read it all, but I just started reading it. I said, boy, this is really something here. Mm-hmm. So he's on a mission. We'll bring some of his paperwork that people then contact
him. Know about how to help him if you want to. Yeah, that's it's really interesting because, of course, this guy just showed up. You get to meet him, but you realize how many stories and things are happening every day you don't know about until you run across it, right? Yep. You hear a guy's story like that, and you're just like, man. And it's very biblically oriented because it's just what it's been going on like that for 2,000 years in some place. So we're in Matthew chapter 8.
Well, I wanted to say something we didn't say in the last podcast, but there's a couple of instances, like in Matthew 8, when the centurion, which we said this was kind of the introduction of that Gentiles could be saved, and not only Gentiles, one that's commanding an army that is viewed as our enemy for the Jewish people.
Which, by the way, ironically, it was also another centurion, Cornelius, in Acts chapter 10, that he and his family become the first official Jewish converts post-Christianity, which was really interesting. So again, to your point, these guys are occupiers. I mean, people hate these people, you know?
But I was going to say, you know, a lot of churches, you hear these people say, oh, that was a good word. Or they say, they use that in a way where like somebody says something that was like, this word came from God. But I think they get that from this terminology that I was going to bring out. When the centurion, he told Jesus in Matthew 8:8, when he said, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. And because Jesus said, I'll go and heal him. But he's like, well, I'm not even worthy of you to even be, just say the word. Which is, I think, pretty cool, because when this centurion gives the word in what he does,
but
he's like, your word is greater. But I noticed also in chapter 8, in verse 16, because then after he had just healed Peter's mother-in-law, it said, when evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits. And then you see this phrase again, with a word, and healed all the sick. And the point I'm trying to make is Zach and I were in agreement that Jesus is greater than the miracle, and his word is greater than any other word. Yep. And that's why John, I mean, he crafted his whole account of what Jesus did and who he is, where he started, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word became flesh. And someone had the bright idea to put Jesus's words in red letters, which I'm in full support of. And so I was just going to make that point that throughout these miracles, you got to realize who he is. And he gets to his motivation in the end of chapter 9, which we'll eventually get there, because he looked at them and saw that they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Yep. And that's why, you know, John 10, he's the good shepherd. And so I think when you don't want to get too bogged down in the trees of the miracles where you miss this overall introduction of, yeah, there's a God, you're looking at him. Yes, there was a law, I'm fulfilling it, but I'm doing this because I love people. And my word is more powerful than any other word you can come up with, which is why we put our faith and trust in them.
The world's full of pontificators on certain levels, from the philosophers and all of them, you know, Socrates, you know, Aristotle. They've had these people, you know, philosophies, you know, they're saying what they think, and crowds gather up. But to this day, one person that you could rely on to be the final word, I'm looking at it like final word, is him. Yeah, Jesus.
That's right.
One person who ever lived. That's pretty rare, Al.
Yeah. Well,
a needle in a haystack.
It shows his true nature. And Zach talked about that before last time. It shows that he is truly unique. Ooh. And different from anything or anybody that's ever lived or ever will live.
That's it. I mean,
because he's divine, you know, human being, which is powerful. Well, I think what's interesting, Jay, is that you brought this up before we get to the two demon-possessed men and the pigs. We kind of alluded to it last time, that they had the little instance where they were in the boat and Jesus was just going to sleep through it because he wasn't worried about it at all. But of course, they were afraid they were going to get swamped. So they wake him up, and it's almost like he's a little bit like when we used to wake up Dad. You know, there was a rule when we grew up, you don't wake Dad up. You know, it's like the old Jim Croce song, you don't spit in the wind.
I carried that over into my crew.
Yeah.
They don't wake me up. I had two rules, basically. Don't lie and don't wake me up.
And if you wake me up, don't lie and say you didn't do it.
Well, the don't lie, I offered grace on anything except lying. Let me hear it.
Well, Billy Red Dog Phillips was working for us at the time, and Leonard Skinner called me up. He wanted to come together and have a duck hunt or something, but unbeknownst to me, because I'm in there taking a nap. Well, because they had instruction, don't wake him up, I got up, and when I woke up, Billy Red said, Leonard Skinner called, and I said, what'd they want? He said, well, I don't know. They just wanted to talk to you. I said, well, what's their number? He said, well, I just told them you're just taking a nap. And I said, let me explain something to you. You don't wake me up unless the President of the United States or Leonard Skinner calls.
But you should
either one of them call, give me the telephone.
You should have clarified that. Because, look, when I was a kid, if the President of the United States would have called and you were taking a nap, I would have said, can I take a message because he's taking a nap? I wouldn't have awakened you.
Yeah.
Well, so, to my point, that's kind of
fine. Down. Give me the information. I can get a hold of them if I want to.
at least take a number. Let's take a break. So, Dad, we got to meet our good friends that created Omega XL, and they did it with 35 years of clinical research. It was really interesting listening to them talk about pain and how they dealt with it. And of course, Dr. McQuillan, the wife part of this team, it's a husband and wife team. She's a researcher and a doctor. So she really kind of explained to us the science behind why this product works, and it really does. And so Dad and I were just kind of, you know, doing a testimonial about how it's helped us with our inflammation. So we want to encourage you guys to check this out, especially if, you know, you got some aches and pains and chronic stuff. It can really, really help, because it's helped us a lot, Mom and Si as well. So you go to omegaxl.com/fill, and you're going to buy a bottle, and you get a second bottle for free, and which is really great. That's a 2-month supply. And she told us it takes about 8 weeks before it like fully integrates with your system. So that's when you'll notice the difference. OmegaXL.com/fill, or you can call them 800-844-4888. That's 800-844-4888, or OmegaXL.com/fill. So I don't know that Jesus was perturbed, but so when they wake him up, he says, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. They were amazed and said, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." What I found was interesting about that was he's been healing, doing all these great things, and they seem shocked over this particular thing. And maybe you're right, Jess. Maybe it's just because it was the first time nature. Does drive fear in people. I mean, you see people when a storm is coming. I mean, people get.
What I'm saying is, if you even in the witchcraft world, and that there's all these remedies, and that's where we get all these movies about this. Okay, you can heal some people. You got some tricks here, and okay, you can do a seance and remove demons, but you know, a hurricane's a hurricane. No. Wait a minute here. I really think that's what the problem was. Because if you were in the storm, I've been out on the water before and a storm come up. And that day when me, you, and Tommy, we were duck hunting somewhere, and Tommy had this bright idea that, oh, the wind's not that bad. And we get out there, and I'm like, we're going to die out here. Because the waves were so big. Yeah. And I was like, well, I guess when the boat turns over, I'm just going to grab one of these trees and hope somebody picks me up. Because we're not
going
to make
it. We're going in the water.
But we did. I mean, maybe the Lord intervened, but I thought death was pretty sure there on that day. But I would have never thought, back in this day, he can just go, shh, in the storm.
Right.
Plus, you get to looking at these readings and you say, how could mere men have invented such a person? And I'm thinking it's impossible to invent this.
Yeah.
Well, and to my point, Phil, when it says he rebuked the winds and waves. So what did he say? Whatever he said, I think some of the other parallel passages, they be quiet or be still. Or even when we get to the pigs, you know, he just said one word, go. But when Jesus says go, things happen.
Old Thomas Jefferson, I always bring him up when I get to these readings, because when he got to this part, he said, "I have no argument with what he said, the greatest words ever spoken." He said, "But I can't make that next leap."
So he would have loved the Sermon on the Mount, not so much the proving of the authority.
He couldn't go with
the supernatural. But my point was, when somebody says, "Do you have a word from God?" I say, "Yeah, Jesus." Because I'm going to use his words.
Yeah.
His words are more powerful than my words. So. Yep. You get to know Jesus and what he said, and that's the way to have success.
And by the way, it works both ways. Jesus calmed it with a word, but you look back in the Old Testament, and you know, also God, he conjured weather and events with a word. I was thinking about that when, you know, it hadn't rained in 3 years, and Elijah, you know, after he defeats, and so now God's going to bring rain on the land. And it said a cloud came up about the size of your fist. I mean, it hadn't rained in 3 years, and all of a sudden this little cloud comes up the size of your fist. Then, of course, just in no time, it's just raining everywhere and replenishing everything in Israel. It hadn't rained in 3 years. So he has the power both ways. Not only can he calm the storm, but he can bring a storm, you know, or a plague or whatever, you know, turn the locust loose, turn whatever. So it's fascinating.
Think about it. What struck me is he got into the boat with his disciples. And even his disciples, having seen that.
Correct.
And also the man with leprosy and the faith of the centurion, and Jesus healed many and caused to follow in Jesus and the loaves and the fishes, whatever. but you just add all that up. But to show you the frailty of the human mind, they still didn't believe in him. They still didn't believe in the resurrection. They were still not quite sure of what he was fixing to do next, because they wouldn't have deserted him.
Right.
So if you look at it, you say, after all that, you would have thought, like Peter was saying, I'll never forsake you. But he did.
Yeah.
So it shows you the frailty of the human race.
Right.
Takes a lot to win them over, Al.
It does. And to keep them won over.
Even the miraculous, it won't bring them.
I agree. So Jason, this 28, he arrived at the other side. So he's on the Sea of Galilee. And you've been there. Do you remember them saying that you were where this happened? I was wondering if that
came
there up.
Was one. They said there's a cliff there that kind of matched it. But to me, the whole Sea of Galilee is kind of a bowl.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you can
any cliff would have sufficed for this, even 2,000 years later. I can see them. I just wondered if,
of course, I'm sure every tour guide wants to highlight everything. So I just.
Yeah, that's what I gathered. I mean, everywhere we went, it was like, no, this is the place where they think Jesus was crucified. And I was like, well, the same guy said that 3 miles down the road here.
That's right.
And he did it for half the price.
If I'm going to be told a tale, I'd just soon do it at a discount, is what you're saying.
I mean, that's kind of the way it was. I mean, every cave, which these caves were cool, every cave we went into, now this was probably the cave where they think, you know. And so, but they had the one for Jesus's birth. They had the one for his resurrection. I mean, it probably wasn't this one, but it was like this. But I mean, look, it doesn't matter what the exact.
Because it gave you the sense of being there, what it would have looked like, which is.
I will tell you this. Every place we went, there were people in tears. No, to me, I'm looking at things more from a spiritual perspective, and they're looking at this physical place.
Yeah.
But even that, it is powerful that 2,000 years later, there are people in large quantities gathering and tears are flowing.
Yeah.
Just be it in the very, just the general area of where this went down, which I think is really
but
powerful.
I get that because it.
Stephen said to this day, the feel of it as a follower of Jesus who worked his way out of Judaism, he said, to this day, you're walking around where he walked and there's a feeling that comes over you. Like,
yeah. I mean, I get that it would spark a strong emotional response, Jace, because you know, you go through a life changing event by following him. And then if you get to be the place where he was and see it, I mean, that's pretty awesome. I'm hoping to get there myself. So anyway, he gets to this region of the Gadarenes, and there's two demon-possessed men coming from the tombs. So obviously, back to our outcast themes, these guys are living in the cemetery, which, by the way, is another unclean place. That's not, you can't be hanging around there. This is another violation of the, you know, once you're there, out where the dead people are, no good.
I think too, Al, also, when you look at how he describes the opposition, you know, in the last one, the storm was furious. And in this case, it says they were so violent that no one could pass out of way, which in my point, I think a lot
everybody
of times.
Everybody just went around them.
Yeah.
But a lot of times we blame God for a lot of things that the evil world is responsible for, and in this case it was causing violence, which is a problem in our society today,
big one.
And when you say, like, I mean I don't know about y'all, but if I'm in a big city and I'm walking and I see a group of people there and they seem like they're out of their mind and they're yelling at people and they haven't bathed and it smells terrible, I tend to cross the street and just, you know, I tend to avoid, you know, engaging.
I guess my question is, where in the Word of God, and we have Matthew, then next Mark, Luke, and John, when did the demon possession end?
I want us to talk about that, because a lot of people are going to ask that. What we today...
Yeah, this is the way it was there, but that's not happening.
We call it mental illness today is how we've termed what is being described here. Now, I don't know, you know, I do know some people that have been mentally ill. Was that demon possession?
Well,
what do you think?
I think the world's response is, you know, let's do something about mental illness. which we're all for. I mean, but the world never addresses the spiritual,
right?
The spiritual side of things, spiritual illness.
Because it seems like the assumption is always that it's mental or physical.
They were violent, and they were doing a lot of shouting. Well,
Zach, what's
hang,
your take?
Hang on, let's take a break. So, Jace, you brought in some eggs from your new ranch. So, and you got chickens there, right?
Yeah, I got bunches of chickens.
So, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
The greater question is, which came first, the human or the chicken? Because I've learned something. The first thing I found when I visited my farm was one of my chickens' head. It had been decapitated by either a fox, hawk.
It's a mink job.
Well, it could be a mink.
Mink goes for the head.
But I thought to myself, the chickens didn't make it millions of years throughout all what's happened without the human aid.
That's right. So because we want to eat those ourselves, because every part of it is delicious, right? Yep. So one of our sponsors is a company called Good Ranchers, and they have wonderful chicken. They call it better than organic chicken. Mm-hmm. And they also have American craft beef. Everything is raised on American ranches around the country. They deliver it right to your house, which is really good. You save money by being able to get it every month, so you have to go to the grocery store. So it's good stuff. Go to goodranchers.com. You can subscribe, which saves you 20% off of each box of their meats. Also brings your cost down to about $5 a meal. So you also, right now, you can get an additional $20 off and free express shipping if you go to goodranchers.com/Phil or use the code Phil at checkout. That's $20 off and free express shipping at goodranchers.com/Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously legitimate mental illness. I mean, our grandmother,
yep.
Phil's mom was, diagnosed with bipolar disorder and manic depressive, I think is what they called it back then. So, I mean, I'm not discounting that. But I do think that, we do want to attribute spiritual sickness. We're like, we can't go there. So we got to sometimes we conjure up and want to make everything a physical illness, and it's just not true. I mean, there is a spiritual sickness. But Phil, you've on the podcast, you've talked about your encounter. You've had several encounters with people who were demon possessed, and so I mean, it is still going on.
No doubt
right?
about
I mean,
it.
I mean, you and you're not somebody when you told me the story of the woman at the rehab that you met, and then I talked to another guy who's in a ministry with women coming out of certain types of drug addictions and stuff, and he said, "Man, I see it all the time. I see it all the time." So I mean, I think it's still happening. No question about it.
No doubt about it in my mind.
And the solution is still the same. The word Jesus is the one who replaces a demon in a person's life. I mean, how many times you hear people say?
Well, that's what we got to agree on now, because you got a lot of people running around claiming to have all these spirits and or these powers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the people who say they can be bitten by deadly snakes and then they put them in the ground. And they're like, whoops, but I know where the power source is coming from. But just as a person living in the world, I mean, we still have leprosy today. I looked it up. They said 200,000 guesstimate people have leprosy. Well, it's curable today. And even like you mentioned, our grandma, she actually was rehabilitated. Now, you can say the Lord healed her or the medication got right, but her last few years,
yep,
she never had an episode.
Yeah, she was basically healed. Now, you can say, well, science did a wonder. Maybe so, or maybe just the Lord healed her. But I'm looking at this saying we still have leprosy today. There still seems to be an evil presence in some people that's indescribable.
No, I mean,
Phil's had his moments. I've been sharing with people that I thought, okay, if they don't have a demon, I'll be shocked. I mean, and you just look at, especially in some of the prison ministry that we've done, I mean, they're just, you run up on certain people that seems to be, either they've seared their conscience or they have no soul or they have a demon. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. And people listening to that say, oh, well, how do you know that? There's just something about sitting across from a person. And until you sit across from that person, you probably wouldn't know where I'm coming from. But it I mean, you're just like, I got nothing besides maybe a demon.
You know when you see it. You can't maybe define it, but you know it when you see it. And I think that there is a direct link to some of the drugs that are out there, like crystal meth. I mean, you see these people, we see them all the time at church that come through, or in particularly where Phil's preaching at over in the inner city. I mean, these folks, man, they're out of their mind a lot of times. And I think that they're inviting in this demonic realm. One thing that you can know about demons is this, though. I think this is interesting. When Jesus kicks out the demons and they beg to go into the pigs, I think it's interesting what the pigs did whenever the demons entered them. It says here in verse 32, they came out and went into the swine, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea and perished in the waters. I mean, that's really where the demonic realm leads you. It leads you to death every single time. And what Jesus offers is the opposite of that. Jesus offers peace and life through the Spirit. And so whatever fear that you come across with this demonic realm, I mean, we can all agree that Jesus, the name of Jesus, is more powerful. And Phil, you saw that with the girl at the rehab.
As soon as she heard the words, I know what she was cursing by saying, I know what that blankety blank Bible says. I said, no, you don't. I said, you're doing what you're doing by the power of the devil. Well, when I said those words and she heard them, it's when the wildness and the sequence of events started to unfold, running, projectile, vomiting. I don't know what all went on there. We were just watching. 15 minutes later, she walks in. She's sweating profusely. And she said, in a meek voice, she left. I knew no good MFA cursing. 15 minutes goes by. She walks back in a meek little voice said, can y'all help me? Can you help me? I said, we can help you. We pointed her to Jesus, and she left. She left a daughter of the Almighty. The next day, she was immersed. We baptized her, and she was actually hard to recognize because her facial, everything had changed. She just looked like a normal little girl after that. So,
but she was contorted and twisted physically.
Contorted and twisted, yep.
A lot of people that
my buddy was looking at me like, what in the world is going on here?
What have we got?
And I said, demonic. I've just whispered it to him.
Well, a lot of people say, well, why don't y'all tell these stories, you know, more often, or how come they're not part of your speeches? But ultimately, it's God's power and the one who has this power who can do this. And his name is Jesus, and it's not us. I don't have to understand every single detail on how this works.
Right.
But, you know, I know who has the cure and the answer.
It got my attention. I'll put it that way. Big time.
Well, that's the point, though. I mean, that's the point of this story here is not even, I mean, we can ask whether this still goes on today, which it obviously does, but the bigger question is, does anybody have authority over it? There is somebody who has authority over it.
Besides Jesus.
To the point, Zach, in verse 29, the demons recognize who he was. They said, what do you want with us, Son of God? Have you come here to torture us before the appointed time?
And they knew it was going to end.
That's right.
Yeah. Their time that's a
great question, because they're saying there, we know that we're on borrowed time here, and in the end, You're running the show,
right?
But you showed up early, you know.
That's right.
It's not time yet. It is an acknowledgement.
Which we mentioned that with Satan and the temptation back when we were in Matthew 4. Satan is probing because he doesn't know what he's doing here either, but he knows who he is.
But he knows he's doomed. But that's why a lot of people, there's a lot of human beings like that. They're doomed because I used to think, well, nobody would say, I'm just doomed. I'm not going to make it, but I don't care. But when you read this, you're like, Yeah, they do it all the time.
That's right.
I have no chance, no hope of living again, and anything that could happen in the afterlife would be bad the way I've lived my life, but
yeah.
So what?
Right. No, I think you're...
It's just a fact.
I took a brutal cursing within when that started to unfold. The cursing came first for no reason. I never had said a word. When she turned and saw me standing there with a Bible, she started in on me, you know, and she called me every vile name you can be called. And then she takes off running. Well, I asked that rehab woman who was talking to her when all that cursing took place. I said, do you think she would sit down with us for a while here? And she said, you want to talk to her after that cursing? I said, yeah, we'll talk to her. Just tell her when she sit down. And that's how that whole thing started. But it ended up, she's daughter of God and just as meek and gentle and calm and sweetest little thing you ever seen. But that day, the day before, woo.
Yeah, it took some boldness to do that. Let's take another break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
Well, I know one thing from Acts 20, you want to make sure you're putting Jesus out there first in yep. front of you
yep.
because the sons of Sceva tried it on their own.
Yep.
And they just got the fire beat out of them.
<That's>
they
right.
left naked and bleeding. Jesus, we know. Paul, we know.
And you remember the
who
woman.
Are you?
Some woman was following the Apostle Paul and his little entourage, and they were just back behind him.
Yeah.
And she kept hollering how great they were. Yeah, yeah. Said after about 2 or 3 days, the Apostle Paul got tired of it
that's right.
and finally rebuked her is demon possessed but she was not saying anything bad. She would just, what's the word, bothersome.
Yeah, as I've said before, this is the first time in the history of casting out demons they got cast out because she was annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul just was annoyed. So he's like, get out of her. Well, then, of course, he got the fire beat out of him because she was making money for
yeah.
these people because whatever
yeah.
she had some kind of gift with her demon possession.
Yep.
So it's pretty amazing when you read about it. But you're right, Dad. I mean, it's very common and understood in this context. They were much more open than people are in our culture to even the notion or the idea. And well, I mean even believers.
By the way, you know, I've seen, for some reason, I must say in all this, I have seen an uptick in this type of behavior just trying to sit down with people and point them to Jesus. In the last decade, I've seen way more look like what we're discussing here than I ever did before. So yeah. I don't know what that means, but
I think it's the drugs. I really think that it's opening up something. I mean, you walk the streets of Asheville where I live. I mean, it's like they're just in the streets, just standing there, just completely
yep.
out of their mind, just rocking back and forth, or they're tweaking or wigging out. I mean, it just looks bizarre, and I think that a lot of these folks have no hope, and they just descend into this abyss. But man, I also feel you see that, but you also see, you've seen an incredible harvest over the last
that is correct.
5 years. So I mean,
that
it's
is
kind of
correct.
Cool how God is opening that healing up for these.
It's
people.
An uptick in conversions too, by the way.
Well, because the need is there. And of course, there's a lot of theories, but one of the theories is because Jesus was on the earth during this period of time, that we realize what a chaos it caused on earth, him being here. But think about the spiritual realm as well, because like I said, they're on borrowed time. Evil knows, they know that there's going to be an end.
You got to remember.
So it caused quite a bit of chaos in the spiritual realm.
We have
well.
A culture now where Satan is entrenched in an organization where they actually worship the devil instead of Jesus. I mean, it's they have lessons and how to pull it off and whatever.
Well, you even see that in like the teenage world. This a lot of them go through this gothic.
Yeah.
Whatever everything's all about that dark, is. Yeah. Even and like in the sexual world, you have this. I don't even can't even pronounce it, but they got the whips and the bondage and all this. They try to attach violence and and sex and.
I noticed that's coming out of all the commercials, and watching the NFL and football games. I'm seeing more and more of what you're talking about just on the commercials, and I'm like, where in the world did all that come from?
Yeah, well, it shows you how quickly it descends. Zach is right. It descends into darkness and chaos, which is an opening for more evil to be able to thrive. Because remember when Jesus told the parable, or was it a parable? When he was talking about the when you cast out a demon, you got to make sure you get the right thing in there because seven more will come back worse than the one.
I'm just a one man on human earth, human being on planet Earth. But I've seen a gigantic leap on people satanic behavior more and more and more. The further I go here, I'm 75. I'm looking at it. I said, boy, that's been a big change. It's became satanic worship now is mainstream.
Yeah.
It's mainstream.
That's right. You know, our old pal, Zach,
it's ugly.
That's on the Blaze. Jason Whitlock, who I love, he was a sports guy, but now he's kind of more of a political cultural commentator for Blaze, and which I want to get him on our podcast sometime because he's amazing. But I've been seeing him in interviews lately, and he's been saying the same thing. It's really interesting because he's using a political context, but he says, "I just I'm not going to apologize by saying this, but the way I would describe this is satanic." I mean, he puts the onus back on that these are spiritual problems. Because everybody's talking about, what can we do? The politics, what can the Democrats, Republicans? And he's like, it's satanic. Meaning that there's only one thing that'll solve that. And that's what we're seeing here. You have to have something bigger than that to cast it out and to replace it.
That's why I'm seated right now with my Bible in front of me.
That's right. And surrounded by your sons and nephews.
That is exactly what I'm doing here.
That's exactly
trying
right.
Trying to head it off.
Let's take our last.
We baptized four yesterday morning, by the way. We were born again, so.
Hey, it works. Let's take our last break. So, verse 34, I thought this was interesting. So how do you think people respond to this, Dad? Look at 34. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus, because it would be a happening, because everybody's been afraid of these guys. Now they're normal. The pigs have run off and drown in the water, and when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region.
Yeah,
I mean, you'd think it's like, hey, why don't you hang around? Because we got some more, things to do. Nope. And I've always wondered, was that because they were afraid of him, or was that because all their pigs just died, or was this a financial thing? I don't know. Why would they have asked him to leave? You think?
I think because they knew that a lot of these demonic people were going to take it out on them.
Hmm. Well, I didn't thought about that.
Because the demons
didn't die in the water, by the way. The pigs died.
But they might have thought maybe he don't like pigs. But I do say there's something there to be said about people are more. I mean, look, we love animals, but when you get that out of whack, people are more important than animals.
That's right.
This may be a subliminal point on that, but there's no doubt about that. He was concerned over these two guys who, by no decision of their own, I'm assuming, they were being possessed by a demon. But when you asked that question earlier, is there a demon possession today? I think the difference is, I think before Jesus died and was buried and resurrected, I do think the evil one could come into a person in a demon possession way. This is my opinion, but based on what I'm reading, without their consent, or he could just happen. But I think once that happened, then you got in the New Testament and you got verses like resist him and he'll flee from you. I think Jesus gave you the power to stop that from happening. I don't think he can come and possess someone unless they're willing.
That's just my two.
I think that's
true. I agree. I think that is true.
And I think to Zach's point, you can, I think there are things you can do to yourself, to your mind and to your body that make you more vulnerable for evil to not only rule, but also, I guess, enter and rule, you know, which is, well, which is what people do.
Galatians 5, and it gives the acts of the sinful nature. One of the acts is witchcraft, which the Greek word is pharmakia, which is similar to kind of our word for pharmacy. And you know, I think that's potions and things that they were ingesting to put themselves in a psychedelic world, you know, to alter their state of mind. So I think when we do these things, I think I really believe that's a big, one of the big gateways. You know, Chad Johnson, who has the ministry that with the women, he thinks that sexual abuse and generational sins like that also are gateways in, you know, things that like you're bringing this in into your families. And so, I mean, I think there are situations where people were abused maybe, so they didn't necessarily invite something in, but something happened to them. But either way, I mean, again, I go back to the point that Jesus is bigger. He's bigger than the demon possession, and anybody can be redeemed and delivered. Yeah. And I think that's what was happening here. The presence of God has showed up on the scene, and that's why those people wanted him to leave, because they got nervous in his presence. They're like, something's, if you're an evil person, you don't want the Son of God in your region. You're like, get out of here. And I think that's what was going on here.
I think Zach's on to something. Even in Hollywood, they're making a big push to make movies about psychedelics. And as an answer to the mental illness, they're trying to come up with a drug which would replace the power of transformation that Jesus and his spirit offers, which... So there's a big push, and there's a lot of companies trying to research and getting all this money to try to figure out, oh, maybe it's the psychedelic world that is the cure. But I mean, you don't think that's a push in our world today? That's where they're camping out in, which I think is the wrong move. I mean, even I think that's why marijuana took off, because they're like, well, if we can just get people to calm down, quit being so angry.
But, you know, to Zach's point earlier about the pigs, it's true, because when the opioids moved in big time in America, what followed? Suicides.
Well, exactly.
Death. I mean, young people totally, you know, losing their future and their life.
But Al, they in a different
way. It cost them their life.
In literally. A weird, different way, even in the sex realm, the same thing happened. When they come up with the little blue pill, well, they never thought about extending people's life to where they could have sex again. Well, then they started dying of heart attacks because their body wasn't able to keep up. Yeah. And so, but it made me think,
they missed,
you know,
out
what?
On the idea that our life is in seasons.
Yeah. At some point, the sexual revolution for you is stopping unless Jesus gives you a pill. Seriously.
Yeah.
But people don't, they're just so temporary minded.
Yeah.
That's where our culture is. But I have, it's weird that you brought up that word, because I was thinking the same thing, because of the movies that are coming out with this psychedelic counseling as the answer. You get all whacked out on mushrooms, and then you somehow can find your...
You find deliverance through that, but I read something about
Nicole Kidman did a show or something about that. I don't know the name of it, but I remember reading something about that, that it was the ultimate counselor is for you to get in a psychedelic state with drugs.
But you think about it, that's not only witchcraft, Zach, that's, you know, shamans, you know, the Native Americans and their, a lot of their religious practices, you know, include these, coming up with these things you ingest that then puts you in this state of mind to see things, to conjure things, to, you know, whatever. And so you're right. I mean, that you're now entering the realm of spiritual realm, evil forces. So sometimes they bite back, you know. That's
well, they got that idea from music, because they're like some of these whacked out drug induced songs that came out, which were great. They're like, hey, it's Pink Floyd pulled it off.
I'll tell you what, though, the last time that I saw our cousin who committed suicide, who was hooked on fentanyl, was down at Phil's house. He had escaped rehab, and watching this brilliant person that I knew growing up all my life, who was a brilliant accountant, super sharp guy, and seeing what he had was reduced to in those final months of his life, just completely out of his mind. And I'm looking at him, and Phil, you were there that night, and it just wasn't him. It was not him. He had been taken over by that addiction. And I think it was demonic, you know, and I think ultimately it led to him taking his own life. It's sad, but it's happening all over the country right now. It's an epidemic.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, I had the burden of speaking at his funeral. And it was really interesting because I was sitting there and, you know, I had things prepared I was going to say, but obviously, you know, we were super close at one time in our lives. And so I was a little bit like probably everybody sitting in that room. I was not only deflated, but I was angry because I thought I was angry at the evil one. I was angry at him. And so I'm just sitting there. But then they started rolling the pictures at the beginning when he was a boy, when he was a kid, when he was a teenager, young man, he was married. And it was really good for me personally because then it humanized him again in my mind. That he was a good guy that got on a bad path and the evil one got into him. And that's what happens. I mean,
Jace has mentioned this before. He diligently studied the scriptures and he could quote them. If I started out on a Bible quote, he would finish it. He knew the scriptures, but he just didn't know Jesus. Yeah. He refused to come to Jesus.
Right. And you introduced him to Jesus in a process, and he did great for a while in there.
Yep.
And that was back to that parable, till the seven came
I
back
tried
in worse than
with
the
everything in my power. I tried with God's help, and it, you know, but.
But you got to remember, Phil, when you get down to chapter 9 and 34, and Jesus drives out another demon, well, the Pharisees, you know what their response was in verse 34?
He is a demon.
It is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons. That's why last podcast I brought up the idea of model prisoners in our prison system. And we have some churches and religious people that are, they're model prisoners. Because they're not looking at Jesus and his grace being offered. They're still trying to base it on some kind of human performance, which can never be done. So the best you can hope for is be a model prisoner at a church
building. Still behind bars.
You're still behind bars. That's right. And this is a classic example of them.
It's a good point. Well, we've run out of time, Zach. That went by quick.
It did.
So we'll I don't think we ever got to where we were initially trying to get to. But
Well, the good thing about it is we got next time.
The Bible's thick.
We'll do better next time.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.